Warning. Critique Revolve contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue to listen.
You stumbled upon an opportunity. I can make you rich. Rich enough to impress a princess.
What would I have to do?
There's a cave of wonders. Bring me the lamp.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Critique Revolve here on Rain Man Digital. It's me, Brian, bringing you this one with our special guest today. Say hello, Greg.
Hello, everybody.
All right, guys. So today, Greg and I, or tonight, this evening, whenever you're listening, it doesn't really matter. Greg and I went and saw the new Disney live action adaptation of one of your favorite childhood, if you're my age or, you know, younger. And if you're older, you creeper watching old Disney movies. Aladdin, 2019's PG rated adventure comedy family film coming to theaters May 24th of this year. Clocks in at 2 hours and 8 minutes. And stars, what, Will Smith, Mina Mousad, Naomi Scott, and is directed by Guy Ritchie with screenplay by John August and also Guy Ritchie.
I'm the giant Disney. Oh,
hold on, buddy.
Oh, I'm
you're
sorry.
Getting ahead of yourself here.
You're looking at me. I thought you needed to talk or something.
Just because I'm looking at you doesn't mean I want you to talk. All right.
Fair
so enough. Sit in your corner. So, guys, for those of you that don't know the story of Aladdin, let me read the synopsis. Fuck you, Greg. So, a kind-hearted street urchin and a power-hungry grand vizier buy for a magic lamp that has the power to make their deepest wishes come true. That's actually a phenomenal synopsis.
Yeah, that actually...
I mean, honestly, normally what I get is, a plucky street urchin falls for a princess in disguise. Ooh! Like, that's the normal fucking, like, bullshit that you get. This one's straight up like... Fuck the chick. It's about two dudes because this is 2019 and we hate women.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, this is off to a great start.
Damn. No, but seriously. So the reason that Greg's here today, which I mean, honestly, there's more than one reason why Greg is here. But the big reason Greg is here is that he is kind of our resident, Disneyophile?
A Disney fanatic. I don't know.
Disney fanatic. I don't know. Mouse fucker. Whatever.
Wow. Well,
are you okay, buddy? Like yeah, you said, wow, a whole lot.
It's like Disney fanatic, Disneyophile, mouse fucker.
Hey, it's all the same thing.
We drop all the way down to probably the worst sounding thing ever.
So everybody, I think honestly, everyone that listens to our show has probably seen Aladdin, you know, whether it's because of your kids or because you were a kid when it came out. When did the first one come out, Greg?
The original Aladdin, let me see.
Really?
I thought you had it up as well.
Why would I have that up, bro? That's your job.
I don't know.
I figured you just know it off the top of your fucking head.
Oh, no. Like,
Disney's Aladdin grossed $328.
It came out in 92. The original came out in 92.
Is it really that old?
Yeah.
Well, so one of the things to note about Aladdin that I do know from my ridiculous amount of useless trivia is that it was one of the very first times that you actually had a star in a voice role for any. Either any kind of cartoon, right? Any kind of animated film. You had Robin Williams come in and play the genie.
He was essentially the movie.
Well, exactly. I mean, that's the whole thing. Like for those of you that remember, the genie was the movie. Don't get me wrong. The songs were cute. And, you know, the quasi love story that was in there about not lying to your partner at the very beginning, because we all know that relationships built on lies don't work. And then you had like the power hungry Jafar, and then you had the fat, dumpy little Sultan who was adorable.
Yeah.
Right. And you had a talking
parrot named Iago.
A talking parrot named Iago played by Gilbert fucking Godfrey.
God damn it.
And then you had Abu, the cute little monkey sidekick who didn't speak, which was kind of confusing because if one animal can talk, why can't they all talk? And then you had a flying carpet, which was fucking rad. Right? That's the original movie.
The whole thing
with the original movie was that you had Robin Williams doing what Robin Williams did best, which was just improvising.
And doing his voices.
And,
essentially, it was basically PG or G Robin Williams comedy.
Well, exactly. I mean, it was a lot like what you would see, what you wouldn't see from him at the beginning, but it was kind of like the Patch Adams-esque kind of stuff, although that movie's so goddamn sad. But no, when you talk about like, you talk about Aladdin, you talk about kind of what kicked off all of these famous actors doing voiceover work was Robin Williams taking that role to play, in my eyes, himself as a big blue magical genie.
Mm-hmm.
And, or at least his public persona, I guess is probably the best way to put that because, yeah. You know, man,
yeah, they did. I love it was, that it was just basically, I even remember, when the animators for Disney were, they were making the movie and they would, I can't remember if they watched Robin Williams.
They comedy. What happened was they referenced his studio sessions. Cause I watched, there was a documentary about the making of Aladdin. And what happened was because they weren't sure what words were supposed to be coming out of the genie's mouth, they had to wait until they knew which of his improv they were using. And so to get a lot of the expressions on the genie's face, the reason the genie looked so much like Robin Williams was because they were actually referencing his studio sessions and his comedy itself to some of his older bits and stuff to get the facial expressions right for whatever it was that the genie would be feeling at that time. I think a perfect example of that is the pouty genie with when Jafar takes over in the original film, the original animated film, when Jafar takes over and is forcing Genie to do just horrible things that Genie had no desire to do.
But he had to essentially
because of his
genies, and they got that down really well with what he looked like.
Yeah, absolutely. And
one of the things that with when we go into this version, one of the original animators, which was Glenn Keane worked on like Pocahontas,
right.
Beauty and the Beast.
When they were still hand drawing everything.
We're still hand drawn, and he's kind of one of those second generation patriarchs of like Disney animation. Like he's considered, you know.
Right. He's like the guy.
He's one of those. Yeah.
It's not the first generation, but the 80s renaissance of Disney animation and the 90s, and so especially renaissance.
They had something where they had to kind of match that fluidity with the genie in this one, because with the animators from that, and you had Glenn Keane in that group.
Right. Cause of course they didn't, you know, turn Will Smith into a genie and make his legs vapor. Like that's not physically possible. So they had to do, I think one of the things that this film actually did really, really well was incorporate the CGI into the film. I think Guy Ritchie knocked it out of the fucking park for the most part. When we get into some spoilers, there were a couple moments, that I do want to just kind of briefly touch on, but overall, I think going into this movie, you know, having this beloved animated film, and I think it's beloved worldwide, for Aladdin. And, you know, Jasmine was one of the very first, princesses of color.
She's one of the first strong princesses that was
I was getting there too. Oh. Yeah, she was one of the first princesses that wasn't white and that wasn't just waiting for her white knight to swoop in and pick her up, like Greg was saying. She was one of the very first princesses that actually had a voice and spoke, you know, like women speak, not like a servant or not like a docile, I'm going to lay here and sleep until I wake up, or I'm going to be stuck in this castle until
I'm going to be seen and not heard.
Right.
And it was, you know, with Disney at the time, and Disney's always kind of been on that a little bit ahead of the curve sometimes
when it comes to social issues, aside from Song of the South. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. But that was the thing, is like Jasmine was one of those first princes that not only did that, but she was also kind of a strong, example for,
well, she was a character that little girls could look up to and could aspire to kind of find themselves. Cause I think that's part of what we do see in the original Aladdin, is the Jasmine kind of, she finds who she needs to be in her world, not necessarily by following the rules that were set forth by the patriarchy, but also not completely blowing everything up into revolution, V for Vendetta style.
Right.
Like, you know, it was that very much like, I can change things from within.
Yeah.
But, you know, not be subservient. And I think that was a drastic change for the Disney storylines.
Oh yeah.
You know?
I was going to say, you know, kind of transitioning into the 2019, you know, I don't want to say remake, but kind of retelling or.
Sure. Well, and we'll get into it. Like, I think that's all into spoilers a little bit.
Oh, I wasn't going to go into it. So I was just going to go into who was in it.
Sure. So what you have with this, guys, is, you know, everybody saw the images of Will Smith as the blue genie.
Yeah. That was the big thing that when it came out.
And I think I want to get past that first and foremost, because I know everybody wants to know what our opinion is on it. You know, it's one of those things where you guys know that when I go see a movie, I will always tell you straight what's good and what's bad about that movie, whether it's worth it or not. And I think that for this movie, like I was getting into with, it's a beloved tale. It's a beloved story. It was told so well, and Robin Williams' performance was so amazing for what it was at the time. You know, one of the very first times and all of that, and not really knowing what to do with a character like Robin Williams in that role. And I think that Disney did such a absolutely fantastic job the first time. It's going to be tough to kind of, you know, catch the magic again.
Well, that's what everybody said when they announced they were going to do a live action.
Right.
And when they did just kind of the teaser, and everybody, that was the first thing. Nobody really was like, well, who are they going to play Aladdin? Who are they going to play?
Nobody cares.
Nobody cared. They're like, well, who's going to play the genie? How are they going to do the genie? And some people are like, well, they could just take Robin Williams' voice and then, you know, just redo it.
Right. And just like do the genie as not a real person, or,
yeah,
or even, you know, just do what they have been doing a lot of times too, with like the weird CGI.
Yeah. Where
they make people younger and they do all of that stuff. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but granted, most of the time you have to have like the actual actor
person there to kind of
right,
do it
to
on.
Kind of do it. Or you do what they did with like, Fast and the Furious, where use the brother.
Yeah.
Right. And then the other brother who sounds like him.
Yeah.
Which was fucking creepy. Like, let's be clear. It was weird. And it looked weird. And it was creepy. And I hated it. Hated every second of it. But anyway, so with this one, I think that the weak link could have very easily been the thing that you could blame very easily for this movie not feeling authentic and not feeling right would be Will Smith. I think this is actually a very gutsy role.
Oh yeah,
for him to take, which is weird, saying that like Will Smith's taking a gutsy role at this stage of his career.
He's even said when they, you know, they announced and he came out that he was playing the genie. He even said, he goes, I have huge shoes to fill that I can't even, you know. He even said he's got a big role to, he has to figure out how to do this role.
Well, and the thing is he had to do it right.
Well, yeah,
and you didn't want to see him trying to be Robin Williams, because no one can be Robin Williams. And you also didn't want to see him as the Fresh Prince or the action hero or, you know, any of these other roles that he has filled over the years. Like, you wanted him funny, obviously. The genie needs to be funny, but it needs to be a little bit over the top.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's exactly what Robin Williams was.
Yeah, that's what
you don't want it to be, like I said, you don't want it to be like a caricature of the genie, who was already a caricature of how many different voices did he do of famous people
right.
in that movie. And so we all know Will Smith does not do impressions. That's not his forte. And so I think what Guy Ritchie did here when it came to the screenplay and to the directing was he told Will, he got exactly what he wanted out of Will Smith.
Oh yeah.
I think without a doubt, you can tell that Guy Ritchie had a very, very strong vision for what he wanted this movie to be and the story he wanted to tell and how he wanted the genie played. And I think that what they did with the genie played into Will Smith's strengths.
Yeah. When even in a recent interview, Will Smith said he did take a little bit from his Fresh Prince character.
Well, he had to.
But that's the thing, is like,
that's the last time he played super funny.
Kind of a really comedic character.
Yeah.
And the thing with like Will Smith, we've seen him in all these like kind of serious roles and these action roles. And
right.
I think we all forget that he comes from a comedy. He did not just
a comedy background, but even like his music career at the beginning, the hip hop was comedic.
Yeah.
Hip-hop.
And so like with Guy Ritchie, and the thing like that we both kind of talked about briefly afterwards was that we all know Guy Ritchie for Snatch, you know, Lock, Stock and Smoking.
The Sherlock Holmes series, and he's done a couple kind of comedy movies, like The Man from U.N.C.L.E. It's comedic-esque. Honestly, I would say King Arthur, Legend of the Sword was a comedy, but we know it wasn't supposed to be.
No. I think King Arthur was him trying to make something that wasn't his normal wheelhouse.
The problem with that, though, was that it kind of went right back into it.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, he was trying to make something different, and he just kind of fell into that.
Well, yeah, because I mean, if you look at it with Rock and Rolla, Revolver, Lock, Stock, Snatch, all of those movies have that same feel.
Yeah.
Right? And with Lock, Stock, it makes it difficult because King Arthur, it's still English.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that as soon as you put Guy Ritchie in that format,
he's going to go back to what he knows.
That smoking aces-esque.
Yeah, but like when he with Aladdin, though, like you got a Guy Ritchie feel –
You did. But, and that's one of the things that actually, so we'll finish up with Will here real quick. So I think with Will Smith, he does not disappoint in this role.
No, not at all.
If anything, he makes the genie his own, and it makes it feel like, yes, it's still the story of Aladdin. It's still the story of the genie, but it's different. It's kind of like watching the TV show of something and then seeing the movie of it. It's very similar to that, only both pieces are good. Now, granted, I will not say that this was as good as the animated film, because I don't think that's fair to the animated film.
Right.
The animated film was absolutely amazing. But this was, it was good. Like it was definitely worth the watch. I don't feel bad for sitting in a theater for 2 hours. You all know that never fucking happens.
Yeah.
And so I'm actually tickled fucking pink. And we'll talk about what I said after the movie to our panel that we have to talk to afterwards, because it was a shock, I think, for everyone, the words that came out of my mouth. But talking about Guy Ritchie, he's done a lot of action movies. He's done a lot of, like, the Sherlock Holmes movies have become more comedic.
But the first one was definitely a Guy Ritchie film.
Right. The first one was
like,
definitely
it Guy had that Guy Ritchie feel that kind of zips around and does like these little back tellings, or there's these right. like little quick.
Right.
Stories well, that he throws
it's,
in.
It's the quick quips that you get from the characters as well. If you watch, Snatch or Lock, Stock or any of those movies, and Sherlock Holmes has it as well, because that's something that Robert Downey Jr. is fantastic at, is that very biting wit. Right. And I think that's what Guy Ritchie movies are kind of known for. Even Swept Away.
Yeah.
Which is a god awful movie, has very quick witted dialogue. Right. And with this telling of Aladdin, and I think that's probably the best way to put it, is this retelling right. or this telling
is,
of the movie.
This version
of Aladdin has some of that quick wit in it, which was amazing to see. And to see what Ritchie wanted to do with some of the scenes, I think was really, really cool. There's one scene in particular that I referenced already that we'll talk about in the spoilers that definitely has a Guy Ritchie feel to it. And it also talks a bit about what happens with the story arc for Princess Jasmine.
Yeah.
And one of the things that, knowing the story of Aladdin and knowing the Disney version of Aladdin, which of course is different than the original 1001 Arabian Nights tales yeah. or whatever version of the story, kind of like they do with everything. There's always, it's a little bit yeah. different, but it's like, I think if you look at, Disney came out with Beauty and the Beast with, Emma Watson. Yeah. Thank you. Emma Watson. And that actually was fantastic. I thought it was great. It was very well done. And I was hoping that's what we would get with this, was something along those lines. And I feel like we did.
Yeah.
I feel like we did. And the Guy Ritchie stuff, like, it feels like Ritchie, you can see his thumbprint, but it doesn't overtake any of it.
And what I said after the film was that, Guy Ritchie was able to take like his kind of part of his form that he uses for his other movies and turn it into a what I think is a successful kids film.
No, and I actually agree with you there, which I think is something that's very difficult to do for somebody that's used to doing R-rated movies.
Right.
To go from R rating to a PG rating.
It's tough to do, especially with like when your wheelhouse is that kind of R-rated, like stylish type filmmaking.
Well, it's the stylish violence that he gets yeah. in those movies. And what he did was he took a lot of those same camera techniques and kind of incorporated them into, and this movie, honestly, I think what this movie does very well is it creates kind of this surreal environment. And it's relatable at the same time, which is, I know it sounds counterintuitive, but if you because you're looking at it and you've got all of these crazy bright costumes, which are amazing to look at. You have very pretty people.
Oh yeah.
In the movie. I mean, Mina, what's his name? Mina Massad,
yeah.
the main actor who plays
Aladdin
is gorgeous.
Oh yeah.
Like, I mean, the dude is so pretty and he, plays the role fantastically.
Oh yeah, he does great.
He does an absolutely just amazing job. And then Naomi Scott, the woman that plays Princess Jasmine, is also incredibly attractive, and does the role justice. Like, it's one of those things where it's like you feel like you're watching Aladdin and Jasmine on screen. And
I think it
worked well that they went with kind of lesser known actors. I mean, they're working actors. Like, don't get me wrong.
They've been in a ton of stuff
and you may recognize them. I know, Greg, you recognized her as Kimberly from the Power Rangers.
Yeah. From the new Saban Power Rangers film. So,
right. Which I never,
and she was also in Terra Nova, the TV series.
Right. That's what I mean. So she's not an unknown, But she's not a...
She's not like, I don't want to say like on the level of Will Smith, but she's, that's bad to say. But suddenly when you in Aladdin, like who's in Aladdin? Will Smith. I know, you know exactly what he's been in.
Exactly.
You know all the movies he's been in.
Exactly.
You mentioned some of these other actors, unless you have seen the other films.
And even if you've seen them, even if you've seen Terra Nova,
you're not sure.
You know who that, like you'll see her and go, oh, that girl.
Yeah.
You know, and so she's a recognizable working actor. And so is Mena Massad, but They're not big names. They're not people
like,
that you
have
know.
You seen, you know, who like, oh, the guy who's playing the genie was in Fresh Prince. Oh, Will Smith.
Right.
It's one of those things where.
Like Carlton?
Yeah, right. but no, and what I really, with this, like with Guy Ritchie and his stuff, and then the actors that they have in this that fit perfectly in this world is Disney is taking a real big shot with all these live action adaptations of all their classics.
Well, I think it's part of it is, isn't it? Isn't part of it that they're going to lose the rights to them?
It's probably part of that. They're going to lose the rights at some point. But I mean,
it's a big deal, though, to take it and
take it from especially animated classics like Beauty and the Beast, because Beauty and the Beast is one of the first films that used CGI. Same with Aladdin. They are some of the first two films that incorporated traditional 2D animation and 3D animation into it. Especially, right. And to take those and to make them in live action and make them good, because I loved Beauty and the Beast. I thought they did a really good job with that. Like, what's his name who plays Gaston was the perfect. Now it's going to bother me. But he was perfect for that. Josh Gad as
he was fantastic
as LeFou was perfect, and you know everybody just they played the role really well, and I was really nervous that it was just going to be like a really crappy like live action film that they were just making just to essentially to keep the rights,
right?
And and then, you know, then they had Jungle Book, which is another one of my favorites.
Oh, I forgot that they even did that one.
And that one, I mean, that's all animated. Like, there's no, like, it's pretty much CG for all the animals for the most part. And then they did great with that. I mean, you have Christopher Walken as King Louie, and the fact that he used to do, like, summer stock and stage plays is awesome.
Well, and I think that, so one of the things that, too, about, Aladdin here that you get is that you get a couple new songs for people that don't necessarily watch theater or that aren't familiar with Broadway and theater, because Aladdin of course has been on stage and there were some new songs incorporated into it. And what this movie did was it incorporated those songs into the movie, and it actually changes the story arc a little bit from what you're used to. And I think that
Luke Evans was Gaston. Sorry. That was bothering me.
So I think that's one of those things that they also did really, really well was Greg and I were talking about before the show, how you have the same basic story. It's still, you know, Aladdin wants to be a prince so he can marry the princess. Jafar is power hungry and an asshole. Like that's the story, right? Like Jafar's a piece of shit, and Aladdin is this innocent, well, naive.
He's kind of blinded into how kind of things really work, and
right. He's
kind
of like
to the idea that you don't need. You don't need money to be happy.
Right, which is how he feels. And then he gets a taste of the money and it kind of changes him a little bit, which is in the, you know, that's the story, right? And then he comes full circle.
Yeah.
Right. And in the end, it turns out that his heart was pure. He was a decent human being, probably better than most of us. And, you know, he does what he does. So this movie, they change it enough.
And one thing that they did change from the original, animated film that I liked and I thought was a nice ad was Marwan Kenzari, who plays Jafar. Mm-hmm. Because in the original anime, he's just a vizier and he's kind of a sorcerer or a magician.
Right.
In this one, he's a vizier, but there's a point in the film where he's talking to Aladdin and he tells Aladdin, he basically says, I was once like you, which was a thief. And he shows him.
Right.
And that kind of foreshadows
it does. And well, and so what you have though is you have a changing not necessarily of the story but of the character arcs that you see in the story, and that's I think a perfect example
of that. And that kind of takes the when he talks to Aladdin, it kind of takes the place of the dungeon scene where he meets the old decrepit guy who's really Jafar in disguise,
right?
But I like how they did it, where they basically made it to where Aladdin it kind of tricks Aladdin thinking, well, he used to be like me and now he has.
Well, and so what it does is it makes Aladdin more trusting of Jafar
right.
than what you ever saw in the original film.
Oh, yeah.
And so, good spoiler, Greg.
I didn't say where it happened. I just said...
Dick. Anyway, so... so, what you have is... you have a difference in character arcs for a lot of these characters. Because you remember in the original movie, Aladdin has his arc, right? And that isn't a ton different, I don't think.
No, it's pretty much the same.
It's tough to change that arc. There's tweaks.
There's more meat to it, I think.
Agreed. I think that the storytelling in this is actually better than what we got in the animated film.
Well, and two, I mean, like, so, I mean, with the animated film, I mean, they're mainly aiming that at kids.
Well, and not only that, but that animated film was literally the Robin Williams vehicle.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's what it became. I don't know if that's what it was supposed to be at the beginning.
But that's what it ended up being.
But it definitely ended up being that way, yeah.
As this one, when we sat and watched it, I can see kids going and getting the same thing as, like, if they watched the original. Right. But then there's more to it for the adults going.
Absolutely.
To where they can enjoy it as well.
And I think one of the things that they did very, very well was incorporating the music into the movie. The animated film, of course, does a fantastic job with it because you have complete control over all of it. But in this one, when they do the songs, it feels organic. It doesn't feel like they wedged in a song here, wedged in a song there, like they did with what was the parody movie? Enchanted?
Yeah.
Which, of course, they were supposed to be wedging in a song.
Yeah.
Right? So, but I'm just saying, like, and so that
this didn't feel like, oh, we got this scene. Okay, here's a song. All right, right, now we're done.
Which is what you get a lot with, and a lot of the songs actually had a very Bollywood-y feel, which makes sense because it is set in the Middle East, mm-hmm. right? And you have these big numbers with a lot of dancers and a lot of different instruments and stuff
yeah.
that you wouldn't necessarily, of course, see here. And so it had a very Bollywood feel without feeling like a Bollywood movie, because I think that one of the things that I don't like personally about Bollywood movies is how the music is really just there a lot of times. I think the movies that do it well incorporate the music into the story and they incorporate the dancing into the story. And I think this one did a absolutely just bang up job of doing both of those things. Every moment in the movie you could tell is supposed to be there.
Yeah.
It all moves the story
forward. It fits it together and it
right.
Like you said, it moves the story forward. Mm-hmm. What I think they do a really good job of is while each character has their own arc, their own story, is that they intertwine them very well to where it's not like where you have like Pulp Fiction where like they intertwine for a second and then they're their own thing for
right.
the entire
it's
film.
Not like they're all just touching at one point.
But this goes through everything. Like they're
all interconnected. Everything matters.
And yeah. You even have, you know, I mean, the Sultan even has kind of a mini arc. I mean, it's very small, but
absolutely.
And it flows through everything. And I think with this, you know, like you said, going with the music, that everything flows together really nicely. Like, and touching on the music, like, you know, yes, everybody, you know, everybody's like, oh, how is Will Smith going to do those songs that everybody knows, you know, like Friend Like Me and Prince Ali. And when I was driving to the screening, I was looking on Apple Music to see if they had it up already so I could hear it.
Yeah.
And thankfully they didn't, because I actually was really surprised when how they did it. I really think Will Smith wanted to do it all his own.
Absolutely.
And so, because we all know Will Smith for rapping and everything like and that.
He sings a little bit. He's not, you know, Jamie Foxx.
No, but that's one thing I liked was him singing was the scene in the beginning. Can we go into like how scenes go? Or are we not doing the spoilers
yet?
Not yet. So I'll touch back on that. But when he goes into it, it's very organic. Like it seems like right. you're sitting hearing a story.
That's what I'm
somebody,
saying. Like it all flows really well. Like it's not like they don't at any point. It doesn't feel like they wedged a scene in just to get some songs in there.
Right.
And I think that's something that's very easy to do on these live action retellings
right.
of animated films that are song heavy, because that is the thing Disney is known for in their animated films, is that you always have the one song or the two songs. And in Aladdin's case, I want to say there was three songs that were well known, if not more.
I know Prince Ali and then Friend Like Me.
And Show You the World.
Oh, and Whole New World.
Yeah, Whole New World. Those were the three. Those were the three, like, oh my God, these songs are so good. Like, that was it, right?
Yeah.
And all three of them, and I don't think this is any spoilers here, but all three of those songs are in the movie. And they're all done amazingly well.
They do a great job. And I think for me, like, you know, everybody here in the on the network, you know, because it's a Disney film, I'm automatically like, oh, I think it was great. I was going in this with a lot of fear that it wasn't going to be good because, again, it's like, okay, is Will Smith? Yes. Is Will Smith going to do well as the genie? There we go.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was another big question.
And then the other thing was, you know, how are they going to tell the story? How are they going to, you know, kind of give more meat to the story?
Well, and there were parts of the story, too, that were just very visual in the animated film. Like, if you look at, like, the final boss fight. The final boss fight. But no, you know what I'm talking about.
Like, yeah, the final scene. Like
the final, the big...
You know, in the animated, like, it was kind of, like, very... It was nothing but visuals. It was very kind of...
Right.
I don't say cut and dry, but it's like, okay, here's this, and then bam.
It's like, here's bad guy, here's good guy, here's bad guy, fight good guy.
Here's
like,
good guy getting it over on the bad guy, and then bam, happiness.
Right. Well, and it was, here's bad guy as a giant fucking snake, right? Or dragon? Was he a dragon or a
snake? He was a snake.
Right. Either way, he was terrifying, right? And so it's like, how do you do that? And do you just go CG? Do you just go? Because I know they wanted to keep it live action as much as possible. And you can actually see that in, was it Rafa, the tiger?
Raja, yeah.
Raja, thank you. Raja the tiger looks amazing. Like, I mean, honestly, dude, I was blown away with the use of the CGI on the tiger. I thought that was amazing. And Iago?
Iago was.
Played by Alan Tudyk, by the way.
Like, what I love about Alan Tudyk just doing these voices is they don't announce him like he's doing the voice of this or that. He's just there. Like, we needed K2SO in Rogue One. Mm-hmm. You know, you're like, is that fucking Alan Tudyk? And then, like, you hear him coming across, like, you hear
right
him coming across as that, and you're like, oh, shit. And then when he did Wei Wei or whatever it was, the chicken from Moana.
Yeah.
Like, you're just like, wait, he did the fucking chicken? Like, they didn't just...
Well, and that's the thing. Like, Tudyk is amazing. The dude's just awesome. Like, he would be one of those guys. I would love to hang out with that dude just once.
Yeah.
Just one time.
And he's funny because when he did interviews and they're talking about all the voices, he'll be like, yes, I went to Juilliard.
Right.
I'm doing the voice of a fucking chicken.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. Like, and it's just amazing to me that the dude obviously loves what he does. And you can tell in the roles that he plays. And you know, the Iago role in this was smaller than it was in the animated movie.
They almost made him like he's like a very Igor type of character.
He's actually a parrot.
Wait, I know he's a parrot, but I mean,
but I mean, like, he's actually a parrot. Like, he repeats things.
Yeah.
Which we didn't get.
In the original.
In the original, he, like, spoke full sentences in the original. And it's not necessarily, he's not like that, but I mean, it's complete thoughts.
Yeah.
But not well articulated.
Like, he has his lines where they're kind of his own, but then he turns them into...
Right. And it's really, really well done. And that's what I was saying. Like, the CG in this, and even the, going back to kind of the Will Smith thing, since we've been all over the place so far.
Yeah.
But going back to the Will Smith thing, I know the fear was the blue.
Oh yeah.
Right. Those first images came out. Everybody lost their fucking minds. Talk about, oh my God, it needs to change.
It should be fucking horrible. They need to do it. It's right. Like, but what's cool in the movie is they kind of address.
They address it very early. In a very real way that makes perfect fucking sense, actually. And I think that was one of those things where that was just fantastic writing. Like, that was great problem solving from a script writer, you know? And that's one of those things that, like, it's like, okay, dude, yeah, let me clap for you here, because that was really good. They didn't just, like,
throw it out there.
It didn't just get, like, washed off, right? Like, it wasn't just like, that sounds so bad. Like, they didn't just wash the blue off of him, but no, like, they explain it. It's not just like it needs to be this way because it needs to be this way. It's like, no, it needs to be this way because of X, Y, and Z.
Right. And I think
that was a great way to kind of address the issue.
And I think, you know, with Guy Ritchie, everybody knows the films he's written and everybody gets those. And then you even have with John August, who he did screenplay for Frankenweenie, Corpse Bride, the new Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. But the one that I was actually really surprised and I was actually stoked about finding, which is one of my favorite animated features that's not a Disney film, was he did Titan A.E.
Okay. Yeah, no, I know it.
And unless I'm going to look at it now and then I'm going to find out that it is a Disney film, then I'm an idiot.
It is a Disney film.
It probably is, I'm an idiot.
I'm pretty sure Titan A.E. was a Disney film, but it's okay.
No, actually, it was a Don Bluth film.
Oh, so it was Land Before Time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, man, so, I miss Don Bluth.
He, Treasure Planet was there. Was Disney?
Oh,
space.
That's right. That was Disney's Titan A.E. was Treasure Planet, right?
Yeah, but yeah. Like Titan A.E. though was He wrote that, and that was a great film. They did it. I thought they did great with
you
that.
That's one of those, man, where if it's on TV, I will watch it every single time.
If it's
or if it's on HBO Go, I'm like, oh, let me watch that tonight.
Oh yeah, there's like films where my wife would be like, you're gonna watch that one again,
right?
And Tiny is one of them. Right. I mean, so is every Mel Brooks film. So
sure. But no, so wait. I think at this point, Greg, we're allowed to go into spoilers if you want, because I know that's what you're kind of chomping at the bit for here.
It's really just, I just want to make comparisons.
That's part of what it is, guys, is that, you know, we all know that everybody knows the story of Aladdin. Everybody's seen the original movie. Everybody's seen Robin Williams play that character. If you haven't watched the movie, you've at least seen clips, you know, like, please keep your hands and legs in the vehicle at all times.
Inside the rug, you know, inside the carpet at all times.
The exits are here.
And here.
Right? Like, everybody's seen it. Everybody's referenced some line from Aladdin, right? Like, it's just the way it goes. So, with that being said, guys, we are going to go real quick, Greg. Is this a yes or no on the watching?
Oh, yeah. Definitely watch.
Right. And for me, guys, this is actually a definitely go to the theater to see. I think that seeing those big dance numbers on the big screen with those vibrant colors, with that sound just kind of punching you in the face, and honestly, even watching Will Smith dance,
well, like,
it's impressive.
The Prince Ali scene alone is worth admission.
Absolutely, the Prince Ali scene. It's you remember how big it was in the animated movie,
and they accomplished that.
Actually think it's bigger. I think they went a little bit bigger.
They did because they expanded it.
They expanded it out into the city more, and they made it longer.
It's longer. They actually involved like the Sultan in it.
Right. The Sultan. And you actually get the reactions of Jasmine a little bit into it. And I mean, it was just such a well done scene. I think that scene was actually done better than what they did in the anime.
Oh, yeah. So, and like you said, even like reactions of Jasmine, even Dahlia, who was her handmaiden.
Which is a new character.
Right. Even her reactions were great. They included all those. Kind of to jump back to where we were talking about Will Smith singing. Everybody knows in the beginning that Robin Williams plays the peddler.
Right.
He plays, and he's in the desert. He does the whole, Dead Sea Tupperware. It's still fresh.
Right.
And so Robin Williams sings that song, sings Arabian Nights, and everybody knows that as him singing it.
Right.
And when Will Smith does it, it almost, because he's telling a tale to his kids, it really feels like kind of a dad singing like an old folk song or something to his kids, where it's got that more, I don't want to say down to earth type feel.
So I think one of the things that they did a really good job on in this, before we go into the spoilers, is that they humanized the genie character.
Yeah.
Whereas Robin Williams made it larger than life, and no way in any shape could you ever view it as a human character, aside from a couple key moments in that animated film. In this one, you are constantly reminded of what the genie truly wants. And I feel like that actually moved the story along better than what you had in
the original animated. I think that humanizing that human part to the genie even makes kind of, everybody knows at the end of Aladdin, you know, Aladdin's like, oh, you know, I'm going to save my third wish now. I think I should save it. I think I need to hold on to it just in case. And in the animated, you know, he's kind of like, oh, thanks, man. And he kind of dips back into his lamp and he's pouting.
Right.
In this one, though, there's more to it. It's more of kind of like, oh, I thought we were friends. Like, I thought this was, and there's legit more to it than just, thanks, man.
So I think what Greg's getting at here is that there's a different arc here on the story.
Yeah.
And it's okay. It's a different way to kind of to tell it, in that you're right. In the original one, he's kind of bummed out, but he's like, yeah, figures, you know, we're going to go back into the lamp. Jog on, asshole. Right. Like that's essentially what it is. In this one, it's a much more, there's a much closer relationship, I think, between Aladdin and the genie.
Right.
And it's actually cultivated through the film.
Right.
It's not forced in. It makes sense.
And it's like, genie's kind of trying to teach Aladdin, like, hey, man, you have this power, but
with great power comes great responsibility.
Essentially, that's what the genie's telling him is. And they reference that. He keeps making questions like, oops, you're going to drink from that cup. Like, it's, you know, you have that power, you get that money.
So with this, guys, you know, we're telling you to go see the movie. We're going to go into spoilers right now. So if you want to see the movie and you don't want anything spoiled, go ahead and kill us right now, and then come back, of course, listen to the rest of the show after you've seen the movie, so that you can kind of hear what we have to say about certain scenes and that kind of stuff. So we'll be right back.
The Rain Man Show.
The Rain Man Show.
I was surprised that they even existed. I didn't even know. I thought they went belly up years ago. I didn't know Boy Scouts was still a thing.
Well, because how many people know how to do any of that stuff anymore? Tie knots, help old ladies across the street.
Every member of the kink community.
Okay. But listen, the kink community were not Boy Scouts. I guarantee it.
Well,
useless skills that you will never use in your life, except those lonely nights when you realize you're 40, you're a Boy Scout, and you're a virgin.
On your 48th camping
trip. Then you're going to be tying those sailor knots on those lonely nights.
On that noose.
For more Rain Man, visit rainmanshow.com.
Holodeck 3 program is reinstated.
Open sesame!
The fall of communism and the dissolution of the Soviet Union, and of course DS9 using elements of the Cold War to continue that political thought and bring in the idea of occupation, which was also very closely related to the events that took place in the 80s with the Soviets and the Middle East. This is what Star Trek does and has always done so well. Even when you look at the original series, despite there being a growing trend to talk trash about its politics, the politics at that time were still progressive, though. So you can say all you want about the 60s version of the original series and how the politics, you know, are shameful at moments. But at that time, that social commentary was very, very progressive. We have just evolved more since then.
Yeah.
So Star Trek has always been about that.
Star Trek from the Holodeck, exclusively on Rain Man Digital.
End simulation.
Free stuff is awesome, but free stuff that will spice up your bedroom is even better. Just go to adamandeve.com and select almost any one item for 50% off, and then we'll load on the free stuff. Just enter this very exclusive code, RAINMAN, at checkout, and you'll get 10 tantalizing free gifts, including a sexy item for him, a special toy for her, and a third item you'll both enjoy.
Ooh.
And 6 extra special bonus items that are sure to rev your engine, pique your curiosity, and even blow you away. Plus,
free shipping!
Always sent in discreet packaging. Go to adamandeve.com now. Get 50% off plus the 10 free gifts when you enter the exclusive offer code RAINMAN. Again, that's RAINMAN. Because without it,
no free stuff.
That's RAINMAN at adamandeve.com.
I see you're still here for our spoilers, or you've come back after watching the movie, which is even better. So first and foremost, I think with the spoiler stuff, what we need to talk about, the big elephant in the room, the Blue Genie. So what Guy Ritchie does for this movie, or whoever did the screenplay, I don't know if it was Ritchie or August.
It was both Ritchie and August.
Right, but I don't know which one made this decision.
Oh, yeah.
And so what they do is at the very, very, very onset, he is the Blue Genie, and he actually looks okay. Like, it doesn't look great because it is Will Smith as a blue dude.
Yeah.
And so it looks weird, right? And they do something weird with his face a little bit, with the eyes. But it actually works because you want it to look otherworldly. You want him to have these big old ears. Like, he looks a little off. He looks humanoid, but not human, right?
Well, that's what I mean. That's like, with genies and you know, essentially, you know, djinn is what they were.
Yeah, the djinns and all of that stuff. Like, that's what they're supposed to look like. They're supposed to look human-esque. Like, they're trying to copy a human but can't, right? And so anyway, so that's kind of what you get with him at the very beginning. But then there's a scene where they decide that they're going back to the city of, what's the name of the city?
Agrabah.
Agrabah. They decide they're going back to
Agrabah.
Thank you. And, Aladdin actually looks at the genie and says, well, if we go back, like, how do you fit in? Like, what do you do? And there's a funny moment where the genie is like, I do this, I do this, I do this. And then he's like, but you're still fucking blue. And he's like, oh, right. And then he just turns into Will Smith. And it actually works. Like, you know, that he still has the top knot that the genie is supposed to have for the most, you know, for.
Yeah, he's got the little goatee.
He still looks like what you would expect the genie to look like.
And
but he looks human.
Yeah.
And he's the right color. And so, and it's not off-putting and it doesn't make him any less genie-like, which is weird, right? Like, you'd think that, like, doing that
would make him not so much as a genie,
but you
as
still,
now it's like Will Smith has genie powers.
But at the same time, you still look at him as the genie.
Oh, like, yeah.
For whatever they did for that beginning part to make you think he's the genie, even once he's in quote-unquote human form, you still think he's the fucking genie.
Yeah.
And that's an amazing bit of cinema right there, honestly. It's kind of like, how do you not know that Superman is Clark Kent, right? It's
yeah.
Like, how do you
he's,
not know
he's that... wearing fucking glasses, and then he right. takes them off. And then, oh my God.
Superman. Oh, he tripped on a pink rug. Now I know you're Superman, Clark. Okay, Lois, shut the fuck up. So... Anyway, so it's just, it was a really amazing kind of piece of cinema there. And then talking about the story arcs for everybody, I don't want to blow through this, but we're going to
go
pretty
quick.
We're going to go quick here. So talking about like the different story arcs that you have. So you have all of these different, you have some new characters that are introduced. We touched on it in the first part of the show. You had Dahlia, who is the handmaiden for Jasmine. And the Dahlia character actually humanizes Genie more than anything else. Because he shows interest.
Yeah, and it shows that there's something there of him like granting wishes.
Right.
And then but also what it does too is it gives you that other arc. And what's really kind of cool to see is you see Genie trying to help Aladdin like talk to Will, like, do this.
What it does is it makes it make more sense that the advice that Genie gives to Aladdin. Because now you see, oh, okay, so dude's trying to smash too. Okay, makes sense. Like, and of course, guys, like, I mean, you don't look at it that way because you're going with children or there's children sitting next to you. But in general, that's what he's trying to do. Like, he's trying to hook up with this chick and we find out he is successful. But boom, two kids. What?
3 years apart.
Hey, worked at least twice, right? So anyway, you get like this humanization of the genie character, which I feel like was missing a bit in Aladdin, the animated feature.
Yeah, there was,
but it wasn't necessary.
No,
honestly, but in this movie, it just gives, and I think this is where it goes to making the movie feel more realistic and more kind of grounded. And you get away from having to have Genie be this over the top character because you give him more human tones. And so he can't be over the top because it wouldn't make sense. And I think it goes a long way to making you forget that that's not Robin Williams playing the genie.
And then it's Will Smith. And what was really cool throughout is Genie giving Aladdin advice and then seeing him kind of stumble when he talks to Dolly, which everybody laughed. And it was just, like you said, it makes it more human. The whole movie was more grounded and still had that supernatural feel to it, but in a more grounded way.
Right. It still had this otherworldly, like, you're not really a prince, dude. All of those people aren't real people that are singing with you. Those aren't real elephants. That's your fucking monkey. Like... You know, it does, but having, like I said, the more human characteristics for Genie, instead of making him just like this all-powerful being that knows everything, and they actually call him out a couple times on some of that stuff, which is great. Going into the Jasmine stuff, too, is that this version of Jasmine actually has ambition. This version of Jasmine has a voice. She has opinions, and she's kind of stuck in this patriarchal society where women are supposed to be seen but not heard. And obviously, you know, that doesn't work for a lot of people.
No, not at all. And I, again, going back to what we touched on earlier, that Disney is very kind of
forward thinking,
sure. But with this, and especially with kind of the culture that the story is set in, that's a big chance to take is making a very strong
it's a very strong opinion about the way their culture works.
Oh, yeah. And even the original animated film was taking a huge chance, like, in giving her that little bit more of a voice and not following that typical patriarchal society. And
Well, and I think it's one of those things where, especially now in film and in cinema, you have this kind of girl power movement. Right. I mean, and everything's cyclical. Like, it, you know, if one movie does it, the rest will follow. And Disney right now is on this huge girl power kick. You know, if you look at Captain Marvel and the girl power scene from Endgame.
Spoiler if you haven't seen it yet.
You know, if you haven't seen Endgame yet, you're one of like, what, 10 people in the world that haven't seen it yet? Fucking get off your ass. Go to the theater. But, you know, I mean, you look at Endgame, you know, you have like these girl power scenes. And one of the things that I do appreciate very much about this movie was that anytime she spoke up, and she had her voice heard, it didn't feel like it was unnecessary. It didn't feel like it was just there.
It didn't feel like it was forced into the film.
Well, that's what
so
I mean.
That, like, they fit that. Hey, look, guys, we have a woman. We have a girl power moment in this film as well. Like, it fit
there
her
are,
character.
And here, yeah, exactly. It fit the character. And it made sense because she has been, for lack of a better word, oppressed as a princess to, you know, she's not allowed to leave the castle or the what is it? The
palace.
The palace. She's not allowed to, you know, say what's on her mind.
She's not allowed to choose the person she wants to
she's
be
not,
with.
Right. She's not allowed to choose. I mean, she's allowed to, in she can kind of choose.
Kind of,
but there's a lot of pressure on who she can choose.
Yeah.
It's a very small list of suitors, right? There were.
There is so, one.
Well, yeah, we saw one. But
it's
yeah.
It's so nice. It just, I mean, it's so pretty. I
right.
Just,
so you have like you have this character that it's a very different arc than what you got in the original Aladdin movie. Very different arc. I mean, yeah, she was a strong character, but not like this. And there's the one scene in particular, her second solo song, where it was a very powerful moment in the movie. And I'm a little this is my one complaint. This is literally my one complaint about this movie. Was the rendering of the backgrounds with her in that scene took me out of the scene a little bit.
There was,
and that sucks because it was a super powerful scene. Now, granted, if I was watching it at home, I probably wouldn't have noticed. Honestly.
But on the theater, it's bigger. And, right. And even for myself, with visual effects, like for me, like it's kind of one of those things like where you could tell like where she's.
Well, so what they do is they take the background and they put it in freeze or slow motion.
And then, like, characters kind of, like, disappear.
Not Avengers Endgame disappear, but, like, Smokey disappear.
Yeah,
like,
and it's just kind of...
they get hazy. And that was actually fine. I had no problem with that. My issue was when she was walking and trying to track her fast movement against the slow background, they didn't do it right.
Yeah.
And it's a super nitpicky detail. Super nitpicky. Like, you can actually see the cut line around her. For how, I mean, you know exactly the part that I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do. Because
I see you laughing. And it's the first time she moves quicker than usual.
Yeah.
Where she stops moving in like real slow and just moves at normal pace.
She's just walking and kind of cuts it.
Yeah, and it does. The cut was just off. And it's like I said, it's super nitpicky.
Yeah, it's just something that like.
I have to find something to bitch about, Greg. And this is
your one thing.
This is the hill that I am dying on for this movie. But no, like legitimately, that is my only gripe. The change in the story arc for Genie. Making him more human and kind of having a more human ending for him, as opposed to, you know, flying off as Genie in a convertible in
going on vacation
in you know, the 1400s, or whatever the, was it 1 BC when this takes place?
Know.
I don't know. Either way. But you know, they still do the same, like Jafar is still a piece of shit. He's still an abusive fuck. Iago is a little rat bastard snitch and, but they,
I prefer this Iago way more.
Oh, absolutely. Well, Godfrey. So the problem with the original Iago is the voice. As a kid, you think it's hilarious.
Oh yeah.
As an adult, you think it's grating and irritating.
Oh yeah.
And that's the difference. It's like Pee Wee Herman. As a kid, you think Pee Wee Herman's hilarious. As an adult, you still think he's hilarious, but only because you know that fool got in trouble for masturbating in a theater in front of 50 people. That's funny. Like. Yeah, you went to jail, fucker. It's funny. And best death scene of all time at the end of Buffy.
Oh, yeah.
The movie. But anyway, that's super off topic. So going back into Aladdin with the Genie's storyline and even the Sultan storyline is a little meatier.
Yeah, there's more to him. He's not just like, you know, this goofy little fat tubby butt guy.
Who, and the way that they did the mind control
was great.
So dope, dude. Like
it wasn't just like,
it wasn't constant. And it wasn't immediate. It was like the slow kind of descent.
The slow twist that he
right.
brought him in there.
Right.
And what's really great about it is that, like I said before, they kind of, Jafar kind of, you know, came from almost where like Aladdin, like he was a thief as well.
Right.
And I think one scene that I loved really, really well, and I think it definitely shows a little bit of Guy Ritchie was, there's a scene where Jafar leaves the palace and basically steals the lamp back. In a very, right. you know, very Guy Ritchie-esque type of.
Well, it's that the subterfuge that Ritchie loves to use in his movies. That kind of like, it's not a quick shot, but it's a quick moment.
Oh yeah,
it's a quick movement, and then the flashback to it when the kid
he realizes
he's like, oh shit, I've been had. Oh shucks, like And but it's a really cool kind of way that they did it. And a lot of, and you see that a lot in actually this movie. You see a lot of those very interesting, like just small little details that that Richie's so good at, like catching, you know, one eye looking just a little bit different than the other. The facial expressions of the actors, I think, make so much, they're so important in a Richie film. And he once again does a fantastic job with it. And the actors that he has do an amazing job with it. And having these two young, attractive, Middle Eastern heritage actors, I think was the perfect casting choices. I don't know personally any actor that could have done it better, because I'm not big on Bollywood and I'm not big on all of that. So
I think for this one, again, they had to kind of go with people that weren't big name stars. I mean, you had, it's almost like they kind of repeated the formula from the original where you have
one
really big name star.
Right.
That people know, and then everybody else is kind of like, you know, you're like, oh, they did this. Oh, I didn't know that.
Right. Well, and it was just a really interesting kind of take on it, because if you look at it, like the dude that played Gaston and of course Emma Watson are super famous.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you know them immediately. Right. And all of the voices you recognized in Beauty and the Beast. And in this one, it's the exact opposite. Like, you don't recognize anybody, you know, I mean, you might. But it's like as the secondary or third character on a television show that lasted for a year and a half.
Yeah. And like, it's one of those things like where we even talk about it, the what's his name? The voice of the Cave of Wonders.
Oh, Frank Welker.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Frank Welker does the voice for the Cave of Wonders. You guys probably have no idea who that is. Greg, of course, mildly knows because of his passing interest in anime.
And fuck you.
So Frank Welker was Megatron.
He's Megatron, but he also did the voice of Pooh and the original Cave of Wonders.
Right. Exactly.
But he's also Megatron. And
well, Frank Welker is like, he's the guy for voice acting. He's the Hank Azaria of every other cartoon not called The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Like, that's Frank Welker. Like, if you need a voice done, Welker can do it. Right. And I think he was Starscream in the new.
Yeah.
In the new movie, the new Transformers movies and all that. But either way, like, Frank Welker does the Cave of Wonders in this one again. So there's a ton of nods
to the original
movie and like the eyes lighting up ruby red in a
blue. Well, and the ruby he grabbed in the original was a red one as well.
Well, and it was the same thing where like he looks like, at it, the eyes get all big and red. And like, there were so many nods to the original movie without making this feel like
a shot for shot
remake. Or an homage. You know, because like if you look at like The Lion King, it looks shot for shot on all of the previews.
It looks like it, yeah. And I'm excited to see that just because some of the voice actors that are the voices that are in it.
Well, sure. Who doesn't love, you know, Glover? So.
Well, yeah, but I mean, also,
he's the only one that matters. Shut up.
Okay.
All right. No, but seriously, like, no, I'm excited for The Lion King as well because I can't wait to lampoon it. But honestly, I went into this movie fully expecting
that
all we were going to do was I was going to sit here for an hour and I was going to rail on and on and on about how much it sucked. Like, I was fully expecting that for this movie. And so I said I would tell you guys. So when I walked out at the end of the movie, every time we go to see these reviews, we have to go and we have to give them like little quips, right? Like, we have to tell them, you know, oh, you know, beautifully acted, blah, 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 you know, set dressings are amazing, da, da, da. I never say anything positive. Like, very rarely will I have a positive thing to say on my initial reaction from almost any movie that I go to see. And it's not because the movies are bad. It's because that's what sticks with me. What sticks with me is the negativity of the movie, because I know that if I don't hold on to that with all of my might, I'll come into the studio and I'll be like, oh, the movie was good. Like, I'll pull a Thomas.
He's just afraid to be happy.
Right. So. Well, that too. I'm a very negative person and my Prozac prescription ran out a while ago. So, anyway, but no, so we walk out of the theater and the women that, you know, collect our little sayings
blurbs.
Or whatever, the blurbs, thank you, good word. They collect our little blurbs of thought. I walk out and they're like, oh, here it comes. Cause they know I'm
great. It was funny. Cause when I go into them, I come out and they've kind of come to know me. Like, if it's a Disney film, like, this is really cool.
Right.
But like with Brian, I walked up, she's like,
She's like, and what did you think?
I'm gonna pretend to write this.
Well, no, she always writes down exactly what I say, and most times she laughs because it's funny, because it's true. And so for this one, I come out and I go, I have nothing negative to say about this film, and I don't know how to phrase anything to you right now. Like, I legitimately don't know what to say quickly about a movie that I like, which is a super, super disappointing thing to find out about yourself, that you can't just be like, you know, I can't even, like, off the top of my head, Greg, I could not tell you one positive thing about a movie in less than like 20 minutes. It doesn't work that way, because I never have to. Every time we leave a movie review, I'm like, it sucked. Inside Llewyn Davis is the worst movie I've ever seen in my entire life. Bah. John Wick 3, bah. Like, I'm just fucking negative all the time. It makes me feel like peace, right? Like, I feel like a dick.
You're basically John Lovitz as the critic.
Yeah, right? Exactly. I'm like, it sucked.
It stinks.
Yeah.
It's,
you know. Yeah, exactly. And so, but no, we came out of this one, and I can honestly say, without any shred of untruthfulness, that this was a good movie. Like, it was a fun watch. It was amazing, honestly, to look at. The set design and the costume design was all spot on for what you expected it to look like. It looked like the world of Aladdin, the animated show brought to life, animated movie brought to life. It was breathtaking in scenes, and I will be the first one to admit that there are a couple scenes where I teared, because this, you know, it's a movie about, it's about a mother, a father who has lost his wife, who's protecting his daughter, who is a woman now, but he can't let go of the little girl that he loved, who is supposed to be getting married because that's tradition, but even he says no one is good enough for her. Right.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that they took out a lot of the creepy Jafar, I want to marry her stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I'm glad that they removed that.
And They had it at the end, but it wasn't as creepy as it is. The wedding scene was there, but it wasn't as creepy.
Because it was fucking creepy in the original. Like, it was, because it was like, that was his end goal.
Yeah.
Was to marry the girl. In this, it wasn't the end goal. And I liked that.
Yeah, it was just kind of a
throw in, like, I'm going to make the Sultan pay. Like, it was a revenge thing as opposed to an end game.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed that. So anyways, guys, obviously Greg loved the movie because it had, you know, Mickey Mouse's ears on it. And
that's not the only, fuck you.
And I liked the movie because it was actually a decent movie.
It was a good movie. Like, when they do these live actions, I'm always worried that they're going to fuck it up.
Right. And so far, they haven't.
No, they've done really well.
I mean, I'll be honest, dude. I was expecting it. I mean, at some point, they have to stumble.
Oh, yeah. Like, right? Dumbo.
Oh, Dumbo was bad.
Dumbo was at the bottom of my list of.
Dumbo was actually bad.
Yeah.
I forgot about Dumbo.
Dumbo was one that they.
Hopefully, that's the one screw up that they get. Like, Pixar had a fuck up. What was the one movie that Pixar did that was not great? Was it Lightning McQueen 7? Was that it?
No, it was definitely, I don't remember if it was the
Airplanes?
Cars. Airplanes. Was
Airplanes.
It.
That's the one that they kind of.
They kind of, the cars worked. Let's try planes.
And it didn't work. And planes fell flat. So I feel like hopefully maybe Dumbo is the.
Dumbo, you know what, dude?
They need to stay away from flying shit.
Well, Dumbo wasn't the strongest. I think that one. So I went and saw Dumbo, and that was a hard one to do for them, and okay. they just kind of put it out. But with this, yes, I did like it. I loved it. Same thing, set design, everything looked awesome. They did a great job of building that world, even down to the minute details of just the people on the street.
Right.
Great.
And that's the thing. There was so much attention to detail paid to each individual scene in the marketplace, in the alleyways, his house was awesome as fuck, by the way. Like, I don't care how.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in the animated, it was just a little fucking hovel.
Yeah, it was a hovel.
It was like a little hidden secret apartment.
It was dope. But anyways, guys, so with that, I think that's going to do it for us here on Critique Revolve, here on Rain Man Digital Network. Greg, say goodnight to the people.
Good night, people.
Thank you all for listening. We love you very much.
The Corova Milk Bar sold Milk Plus Velocet, or Synthomesc, or Drencrum, which is what we were drinking. This would sharpen you up and make you ready for a bit of the old ultraviolence.